This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
In a world where overspending, debt, and keeping up with the Joneses rules us all, where the voices from the merchants, restaurants, and credit companies lord over the common man. Out of the darkness, like a beacon of hope, comes a new voice. A voice that's rich and creamy, like your favorite butter, and delicious, like cheeseburger pizza on your diet cheat day. It's the Stacking Benjamin Show.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and just like three shows a week fly out over the airwaves from this basement, on this date in history, the Wright brothers patented a flying machine. You think they probably got some unsolicited advice about how to make it better? Oh, hey, Orville, I think that flying thingy you made up would probably go a lot faster with a bigger propeller, just saying. So today, in honor of that, we're going to offer 68 pieces of unsolicited advice of our own to help you live a better financial life. Here to help this show finally take off, from the Couple Money Podcast, say hello to L. Martinez. And from this here podcast, it's the original, the one, the only OG. And last, and probably least, honestly, the guy so deep, if we're talking like feet underground, from his bunker deep under Los Angeles, the founder of LenPenzo.com, it's Len Penzo. And have you ever struggled to motivate your kids to finish chores? During our Friday FinTech segment, we'll discuss how, with Greg Merced from BusyKid, he might have a solution for you. Of course, we'll magnify a lucky listener's money, and I'll treat you to some of my amazing flight-themed trivia. And now, a guy who needs to get his head out of the clouds, it's Joe Saul Sehy.
But it's the weekend. It's the perfect time to get your head in the clouds. Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Stacking Benjamins podcast. I am Joe Saul Sehy, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And what a gang of merry men and women I bring with me today. Starting off across the card table from me, it is the one and only OG.
And I am kind of itching to get on with it because me got's a big pool and a whole bunch of beers we need to drink. So chop, chop. It's weekend time.
We are infringing on a holiday.
It is. Well, the month of May is a holiday. For me, no, I'm just kidding.
I think the month
today
of
kind of is. So let's get to it, man.
I was going to say, I think the month of April was a holiday for most of the world, wasn't it?
It was. And then you said something about 68 things. My goodness. Can we got to speed this up a little bit.
We might go over six of them of the 68 in this piece.
Six each.
Yes. And by the way, unpaid holiday too. That wasn't cool world to make it.
Last month.
Yeah. Last month. Unpaid holiday. That's baloney. You'd think that we get some sort of time and a half for that. And the guy who probably gets time and a half underneath his bunker, in his bunker, not underneath it. You're not underneath your bunker, are you?
That would be problems, Joe. If I'm underneath the bunker, yes, that's definitely, my bunker does not have a basement. No. It is the basement.
That would be awesome. A bunker with a basement. We could make this podcast there. We don't huddle there during the zombie apocalypse. How fun would that be?
Yeah, well, there's only enough room for so many people in this bunker, Joe. So when the zombie apocalypse comes, you know what? I'll let you in. I'll let you in.
Well, you know, Len, who you'd probably give first dibs to if the zombie apocalypse came, because she's by far the coolest person on this podcast.
Absolutely.
It's our good friend from Raleigh, North Carolina. Elle Martinez is back. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm just amazed you guys know what month it is. I feel like time right now is a social construct. It's whatever day, whatever month you choose.
Do you think the whole world's going holiday weekend? But I just had a holiday week.
I'm still trying to remember what day of the week is so I can get my kids ready for school.
isn't that great? Well, you know what would help your kids learn to read if your kids need better reading habits, Elle?
What?
Reading the Stacker. That's our newsletter for Stacky Benjamins, where your kids can keep up with everything going on in the Stacky Benjamins basement. Wouldn't that be exciting? Your kids are telling you, hey, Mom, OG is going on air. That'd be just super exciting.
I really feel like my five-year-old could do that. She's really into that.
If you've heard the humor on this show, it's perfect for the five-year-old most of the time. Well, we got a great show today, guys. We've got Elle here. We've got Lem. We've got OG. We're going to talk about a lot of unsolicited advice. That sounds like a show my mom would have created because she's good at unsolicited advice. But let's get this thing started.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Today's piece comes to us from a blog called The Technium. And it's 68 bits of unsolicited advice. And the writer here says, it's my birthday. I'm 68. I feel like pulling up a rocking chair and dispensing advice to the youngins. Here are 68 pithy bits of unsolicited advice, which I offer as my birthday present to all of you. I love it, man. When I turn 60, I'm just going to tell everybody what I think about everything.
Finally.
I feel you should go like fire on this and just start early.
Wouldn't that be great? And ghosts, they're real. They're real. Roswell? 51? Area 51?
Area 51.
Legit. Just saying. So
I will say this, Joe. I have a coworker who actually worked at Area 51.
Who was telling us about Area 51? OG, you were talking about Area 51, weren't you?
I can neither confirm nor deny anything that I may or may not have said about Area 51.
About how weird, like, flying in there is? Did you fly in there? I mean, not into Area 51, no. But into...
He'd Roswell. Be shot down if he was anywhere.
I know. No, you're not allowed to fly anywhere near it. In fact, you are correct. I suspect you would be shot down in a hurry. No, I did fly to Roswell, and it is a little eccentric.
Yes. Yeah. Well, this is some eccentric advice, but overall, do you guys think it was good advice?
There was a lot of good takeaways for me. One of them had me laughing because I actually saw it happen during our quarantine.
Why don't we start with that one then? We're not going to hit all 68, guys. Spoiler alert. but Elle, why don't you go first? What's the one you really liked?
The one starts off with reading to your children seriously will bond you together and kickstart their imaginations. I will say that in our family, my husband does the bedtime story with the girls. And just to give you some context, he grew up in a family of guys, mom, his brother's dad, like guys' family for sure. And so our oldest is now in the babysitter club stage.
And he's reading them Rambo.
No, he's joining in and our oldest is asking him questions. What's this? What's this about? Because, you know, babysitters clubs, teenage girls and what they're dealing with. I'm in the other room, so I can't see it, but I can feel the discomfort as he's trying to figure out, what do I say in this instance? I have no idea what I'm doing. So just to hear the awkward conversations and stumbles is just its own show, but it's been good.
Len, you read to your kids? I mean, not now, ooh, back in the
my
day.
My kids, my 20-something yes. year old kids. Yes,
do you gather them around, read them Charlotte's Web?
Call them up.
you know what? When I read that one, I was like, you know, I wish I had read more to my kids. The answer is no. I didn't read a lot to my kids. You know, I did read a few of the little mini standards. What was the one? I can't even remember what they are anymore. Something about
Good Night Moon.
Good Night Moon. There you go. Yeah, that one. You know, I read those little ones. But you know what I really wish when I read that one? You know, when I was a kid, I read the whole encyclopedia from A to Z over a period of, I don't know, a few years. My parents bought it.
That, by the way.
Youngins under 40. an encyclopedia is this big group of books that has, it was the internet of its day, but you had to read. Okay.
Not to cut you off, Len, but the fact that you read the encyclopedia explains a lot.
but there's a lot of interesting stuff. And you know what I really wish I would have done is I wish I would have read just interesting things to my kids when they were younger to try and pique their interest in anything, you know, over time. Pick something off the internet and read it to them, something that was kind of interesting, and just get them to ask questions. I really do regret not doing that because I think that's a great idea.
When our kids were studying poetry in high school, John Lithgow has a book of poems that he curated, and he talks about the poem. So we would read the poem, and then we would, as a family, have a discussion about poems. And we had, and they were all over the place, these things. And it was actually really cool because I don't have a huge, I mean, I was an English major, but I don't have a huge appreciation for poetry. And I have to say that was like a fun 2 months where every night when we'd have dinner together, we would go over a poem and then talk about what we thought it meant and then read what John Lithgow said about it and read it again. And it ended up being a great conversation. But even, you know, a lot of people listening don't have kids, but just being in a book club or discussing a book. I know for our team meetings, we're slowly going through a book right now as a team. And just this idea of reading together is really fun.
Is Lithgow the guy who wrote that poem, There Once Was a Man from Nantucket? Was that John Lithgow?
That might predate him slightly. Oh, okay. Yes, very, very slightly. Although that is very famous. Whatever. The one poem Len knows rhymes with Nantucket, of course. I've seen people do these financial book clubs, by the way, where they all read Vicki Robbins' book together, or they'll all read. I know there's one book group that I know of online that's reading one of my favorites, Ken Honda's book, Happy Money. I think those are interesting. Besides Never Get Involved in a Land War in Asia, which one, Len, do you like?
Well, my favorite one was Being Able to Listen Well is a Superpower. And then he had a corollary. He had actually another one. So I'll call it the corollary to that one, which was the more you are interested in others, the more interesting people find you. And to be interesting, be interested. That was his full thing. And I think that is – he nailed it. And folks, let me tell you something. Being able to listen, if you just listen to people and let them talk, and people say, well, I don't know how to do conversation. I'm bad at conversation. Listen to others and then be interested and ask questions. And before you know it, you've got a great conversation going and you learn about the other person. It's perfect for dating. Like I was like back in, you know, when you're dating and you're just starting, boy, there's never an awkward moment if you're truly interested in what the other person has to say. And that means ask questions as well about them.
Are you a natural at that, Len, or did you have to learn that over time?
No, I'm a natural. I am a natural at that.
Are you really?
Oh, yes, I am. I love listening to others and I am genuinely interested in others' lives. And I love asking questions, tons of questions about other people. I love it.
Al, your podcast is very inquisitive like that. It feels like you're naturally a good listener, but did you have to develop that?
I think the questions and the technique definitely have to be worked on, but I absolutely am curious and I love asking people, why do you do what you do? I think whether it's finances or life, part of the surface, yes, you want to see what they're doing, but then also understand why they're doing it. And usually there's a good story for it. Something that I usually go back to is a class from Alex Bloomberg. He does, well, Gimlet now, but he did Planet Money, and he was so good with questions. And I loved how he always dug into not just the process, but the feelings behind why you were doing whatever you were doing.
And it's funny because he's a guy that he spends most of his time asking questions, but you really feel like you know him, even though I have to say he doesn't really share a lot about his life. I mean, on Startup, their podcast Startup, he did some, but when he's asking those questions, I feel like I know him.
Yeah, you just get a sense of his genuine empathy. And sometimes the questions, he leaves it slightly unedited. So you get the awkwardness, which we all go through when we're trying to ask questions and have these conversations.
Oh, gee, you're somebody who I've known you for what, between 20 and 25 years, I think. And you're somebody that that I feel like it becomes a better listener all the time. So I don't know if you consciously developed that or if you had to work on it.
What's that? I wasn't paying attention. That was coming
from a mile away.
Was coming. But I'll tell you, in the conversations that I have with people, I do know I'm a little bit of a talker. Maybe you knew that about me. Maybe you didn't. When you talked about being a professional listener, I'm a professional talker for sure. And I do know that when I'm very conscious of asking the additional questions and practicing that skill of actively listening, that the best conversations that I have with people, I've maybe said 5 minutes worth of content and listened to 55 minutes worth of content. And what's funny is you hear the same thing. Oh my gosh, I can kind of feel like you understand me. It's because people just want to be heard.
Yeah.
And this is true for relationships. It's true for professional relationships, emotional relationships, and family relationships along the way. So being good at listening is something that takes practice for sure.
I love that you brought this up, Len, because I just started listening to a podcast called The Writer's Panel with Ben Blacker. And it's their roundtable discussions with people who write TV shows. And they talk about behind the scenes, the writing room, how they come up with ideas, how ideas get sold. Like it is, half of it is inside baseball stuff that you're only interested in if you really are a fan of how TV shows get made. And the other half is really fun for anybody. So I don't know if I can recommend it or not. But on a recent episode, they were talking about this and about how in a writer's room, one woman said, when they said, what's one of the hardest lessons you had to learn? This woman commented that the hardest lesson she had to learn was to listen far more often than she talks, because what she found working in different writers' rooms is that that person that talks all the time, and we all know this person, all of a sudden everybody just tunes them out. Whenever they even start talking, you can see the whole room just go down. And she said, I realized early on that I was that person. That everybody just immediately tuned me out because I would never, and she had to learn it the hard way, which I thought was really admirable.
I remember a particular event early in my career. Joe, you recall this from working at American Express. You'd have Monday morning, like district meetings. Yeah. Remember yeah. those? And so I lived in Michigan at the time, but for whatever reason on Mondays, they had us go to the Toledo office. And I was very new.
Not the Toledo.
Anywhere but there. Just,
you know where this story's going already.
No, this is a much better one. So I'm in there. I'm just a smidge tardy, but not, you know, it's like 9 o'clock and 50 seconds, right? It's not whatever. So there's really just some seats in the back, and I'm sitting in the back, and in walks another person who is, you know, dressed professionally like everybody else. And the whole meeting goes on, and this guy's sitting next to me the whole time, and the whole meeting goes on. He hasn't said a word. We've gone around the room and people have introduced themselves, just kind of a normal old school sales meeting, right? To kind of rally up the troops. And there's a little bit of a break. And I said to the guy next to me, hey, I'm OG. Are you new too? And as soon as he looks at me, he kind of gives me a little smirk. And they go, ladies and gentlemen, our group vice president.
Oh.
And he stands up. And I remember thinking from that moment, first of all, like, oh my gosh, foot and mouth, right? You know, you totally didn't know who the boss's boss was. Every event that I had with him, and you know who I'm talking about, Joe, he was always the person in the room that was just sitting there silently the entire time.
All the time.
And then finally he'd go, so here's what I'm thinking. And everybody would finally shut up and go, okay, here's what we're going to do. And all he was doing was just being very good at just getting all of the information and all of the information and all the information and listening and listening and listening. And then finally, when the boss spoke, or if he asked one question like, well, directionally, how do you see this? And then that would be the whole another hour of conversation. And all he would do is just facilitate the discussion, basically, which, you know, is definitely a talent. That's
a great point, because, you know, in my experience in the business world, the corporate world, the best vice presidents and upper level managers, that's exactly what they did. They listened to their subordinates or their people below them. They took it all in and they asked questions, and we got to an answer just from them listening and asking questions. Correct.
Yeah, collectively.
And rather than, because I've had really high level managers as well who tell you how to do everything. Right. You're doing this, we do this, you do that. They don't listen. And so, yes, I mean, you nailed it there, OG.
We've all been in the opposite of that, where, Len, to your point, you have a leader where you feel like the leader has two or three people and the door's always closed and they come out and they have all the answers. And you're on this ship where you've no idea where it's going. And everybody just wants to be part of a team. You want to be part of the group. OG, which one did you like from this list?
The other 66 of them. Well, 65. The land war in Asia thing, that was a cop-out. But it was pretty funny if you get the joke.
Yeah.
I think the theme around failing and being okay with that and owning mistakes, you know, there's a couple of different points in there about that. One is making mistakes is okay. You got to own your mistakes. That was really important. If you're not failing occasionally, you're not trying hard enough. So the whole idea around constant improvement and recognizing that life in general is just a series of plateaus followed by series of exponential growth by more plateaus. George Leonard wrote that really famous book called Mastery, was about that whole topic, that life is just a series of plateaus and that something happens and you have this huge growth opportunity. I think probably the biggest one is being okay with not having the answer. You know, whether it's the one about being incorrect and just owning it. You know, everybody makes mistakes, and you know, they're the people always talk about the ask the question anyway, even if it's stupid, because 99% of the other people are thinking the same thing. They're just not brave enough to do it. That's in here too. And that's the same thing. That's just, hey, I'm the dummy. I don't get it. And being okay with owning where you are and asking for clarification. And that kind of also ties in with the listening one. You know, as you're doing a good job of that, that's going to spark some conversation.
Yeah, that's my favorite. And I'll read it directly here. To make mistakes is human. To own your mistakes is divine. Nothing elevates a person higher than quickly admitting and taking personal responsibility for the mistakes you make and then fixing them fairly. If you mess up, fess up. It's astounding how powerful this ownership is. And yet, Len, you work in a large organization. Sometimes I think in a large organization, that is difficult because there's got to be a little sense of ladder climbing to some degree, I would think, where the second you fall on your sword, you know, everybody else points at you about how they should never trust you again because they're climbing over your carcass.
Yeah, politics. That's in a lot of things, right? Politics gets in the way and screws everything up. Yes. Gets into everything. You just try to minimize it. That's all you can do.
Do you still, it's difficult. Do you still own your mistakes that way?
Well, I do because I, you know, as I've said before, I realized early on, I wasn't going to, you know, I originally was going to, I'm climbing the corporate ladder to be CEO, but there came a point in time where I realized, hey, I don't want to work that hard.
Yeah.
I don't want to spend, I don't want to work, 80 hour work weeks every week and not ever see my family. So once I let go of that and I said, hey, I've reached a level I'm comfortable at, that didn't matter anymore. So I was I always own up to my mistakes now because I really don't.
Make many. It's easy to own up to them when you don't do any.
Yeah, that's right.
I made that mistake back in 97. I owned it. I totally owned it.
To me, this thing reads like one of my favorite books, which is called The War of Art. We've talked about it a number of times. Stephen Pressfield wrote it. He has this kind of a theme on each page. It's almost like you could take each one of these and write a paragraph or two about each one. Not that I need to give him any more projects, I'm sure. But you could take this list and convert it into a book by adding, a couple of paragraphs on each one.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
You know what? I did have one I disagreed with that I have to point out, if you don't mind, Joe.
Anytime we get salty.
We're all listening. We're practicing.
Well, okay. So one of them he says here, is for every dollar you spend purchasing something substantial, expect to pay a dollar in repairs, maintenance, or disposal by the end of its life. So I went back on my trusty spreadsheet for everything I've purchased over the last 25 years, and I looked at specifically my house and the maintenance that I've spent on it in those 22 years. And it turned out that basically so far I've only spent about 25% of the total price, original price of the house on maintenance in 22 years. So, and then I looked at my cars, and on average, the car that I held the longest, 20 years, I spent 50% of the original cost in maintenance. So I kind of disagree with that one. But
do you wonder in the spirit of what he's talking about? I mean, not to defend him, because if the math is wrong, it's wrong. But in the spirit of it, when you make the big decision, thinking about it his way makes
no. Absolutely, yeah. It's being conservative, right? Yeah. That's a conservative.
And looking at the total cost, I think we all look at the price tag and immediately we're thinking this is a good bargain. But even if we just pause for a minute, we can see, is this really down the line going to be something that I want to maintain and take care of?
I like the house example that you gave on this one, Len, because this comes up in the discussion a lot of should I rent or buy? And you look at your mortgage payment, or you look at your rent payment and you say, oh, you know, I'm renting this 2-bedroom apartment for $1,200. I can go buy a house for $1,000. I'll be saving $200 a month. Every homeowner knows, no, that's not how that works. You know, you're going to spend all sorts of money you didn't know you needed to. So yeah, I probably tend to agree with you. It's probably not dollar for dollar. The other one, if we're talking about things that we didn't particularly care for, he mentions tools in there about buying the cheapest tool that you can find. And then as you use it repeatedly, I am not a fan of buying cheap stuff. And by cheap, I mean not high quality. I don't mean low cost. Obviously, I'll pay low prices for things if I can.
Harbor Freight.
I don't know. Is that a low cost place? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You can get a bumper for $10, you know, that'll last for about 20 minutes.
Maybe that's why I've never been there, is because it's
that's probably why. Kind of
lower quality stuff. But
is it in the mall next to Nordstrom? Because if not, OG has no idea.
If it's not in between Neiman Marcus and Tiffany, I won't know exactly where to find it. You know, I can ask my lawn guy what he uses.
They're usually right next to the local pawn shop and the, you know, the dollar store.
Yeah. Well, I do shopping there. No, but I try to be on the higher end of equipment purchases and, you know, that sort of thing. Quality over a quantity, I guess. Buy better socks. Don't buy the cheap socks. Buy good socks.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that'll be on my list.
I think in that case, sometimes it's better to rent or borrow from your friend to try something out to see if you're going to use that tool instead of going for the cheap option.
I thought you were going to say to rent your friend's socks.
No, but I kind of see both points, because at one point, I understand some of us think we're going to be these home mechanics, and even now we're going to be crafting our homes into these HGTV awesome things, and we get all the tools, and then we're down $500 and we have no idea how to hang up this picture frame.
Yeah.
So find a way to maybe can we experiment cheaply and then invest in the right tools?
Yeah. And maybe that's the spirit of what he's saying, is don't even buy the thing until you know you're going to use the thing, right? I mean, I've come home with some expensive stuff that I've never used. I want to ask about two things on here, or comment on two that are really heavy duty financial ones. One seems to go against what financial podcasts are often about. I feel like, you know, people that talk about finance, one rip I've heard people have is that it's all about getting more for you, right? Optimize your money so you get more for you. And yet in this piece, it says optimize your generosity. No one on their deathbed has ever regretted giving too much away. Does that jive with your worldview, Len?
Well, yeah, charity is good if that's what they're, and helping others, and, you know, yes, of course.
But how does that, if you're trying to optimize your own lifestyle, giving more away versus, making sure that you're okay?
Well, of course it's pay yourself first, right? And that includes when it goes giving charity, it's pay yourself first. But yeah, there's a balance there, right? So of course, yeah, you've got to take care of number one first, but try and set a little bit aside for others.
Elle, what about for you?
I feel like there's no mutually exclusive decision. I mean, pay the essentials, of course, make sure, you know, roof over your head and food, but generosity beyond money though also includes time donating. So maybe you're in a position where the money right now has to go towards the essential bills, but that doesn't mean you can't volunteer at the local food bank or donate your time with your neighbor who maybe can't shop at this moment and you can help them out. So I think absolutely this is a critical thing we need to keep in mind to optimize giving of our time and attention. We talked about listening. You know, that is a thing that we could give whatever our income level is right now to our friends, our neighbors, let them vent, kind of commiserate with them and celebrate with them. And then, of course, you know, a lot of great organizations do need financial support. So if we're in a position to give.
Yeah, I feel like, and this comes from, I mentioned Ken Honda earlier. Ken Honda talks about the more he gives away, the more he gets. And that it just he feels like he's always rich because he's constantly giving. Oh, gee, this one I like too. Friends are better than money. Almost anything money can do, friends can do better. In so many ways, I like this line. In so many ways, a friend with a boat is better than owning a boat.
That's 100% true. It's 100%
true. Unless it's an airplane. Then owning an airplane is better than having a friend with an airplane.
Well, there at the end.
Although I don't have any friends that have airplanes, so I wouldn't know that.
And there at the end, it sounds kind of takey, sounds kind of, you know.
But it's a tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, but the rest of it, I totally agree with. I'd rather have good friends than a lot of money.
That's what it is. Yeah, but what if you need... If you need a heart transplant or something, you better have a, you know, sometimes you need the money to pay for somebody who can do a heart transplant.
No, you just need a healthy friend.
With a good, or an unhealthy one.
Unhealthy, but with a good heart.
It keeps on talking about, like, make sure you're not the smartest guy in the room, but make sure that, you know, make sure that you've got a whole bunch of old people you're around just in case you need like a new liver.
You know, they can actually split a liver in half. They don't have to take your whole liver for a transplant, right? They can just take half of it and give it away.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you'd have
to give it away. That's your choice, not somebody else's.
Optimize their generosity.
I think we just devolved this list here. We'll have the rest of this list on our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com. Good stuff here. Well, summertime is right around the corner. And if you are like I was when I was a dad wondering what the heck I was going to do with my kids. Of course, many of you, because of the whole school from home thing, have been wondering that for a while now. Well, good news. We found this cool thing called Busy Kid, and we don't know much about it. Today is FinTech Friday. That means we take a look at some FinTech product together, you and I, and see if it's something that we both like. So while these are not an endorsement, we're just kind of figuring it out together. Let's say hi to the creator of Busy Kid, Greg Mercer. And joining us on My Dad's Shortwave, it's our new friend, Greg Merced. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Well, you and I, as we were talking about you today, you have successfully raised some kids of your own. You're apparently painting all day today.
Well, successfully is, I don't know about that, but I'm trying my best. Our oldest just got married last week, and I don't know how I got sucked into this, but now I'm the U-Haul driver and the painter.
Yes.
I mean, the things you'll do for your kids, right?
I remember that. Well, and I still am. There's always dad, hey, you know, independent, but not. But then again, dude, I'm 51 and I often, well, no, I'm 52. Well, I can't even do math anymore. But
You're losing it.
Yes.
No, you are losing it.
Well, if you've listened to the show, Greg, you know I lost it a long time ago. So, but I still call on my dad. I still do. But I want to talk, let's talk origin story about Busy Kid. Because I love how these creators like you come up with some of this stuff. Was it because you needed something in your own life or you saw a break in the marketplace? Like tell me about how Busy Kid began.
Okay, so here's the real deal. Okay, I'm a certified financial planner, have been for over 20 years, have been managing people's money, whatever. And I just kept recognizing the commonalities between my clients, which they're all successful people, obviously. They worked really hard and they were smart with their money. Every single time, those two traits were always there. And I thought, how do I get that into my own kids so that I can successfully get them out of my house, never to return again, except to visit on like a vacation, right?
In a fun way. Yes.
Holidays. That's it.
Yes.
And I think what we want as parents, get our kids successful so they can fly on their own, right? I mean, it's the little birdie that wants to leave the nest. I mean, we need them to do that. And I believe the best skills that you can give them after you teach them not to, you know, beat people up and, you know, steal is truly to teach them how to work hard. And then once they get some money, manage that money right. Those two things like are preeminent. And if they can do those things good, good likelihood that they won't stay in your basement till they're 30 years old.
Did it begin as an app or did it begin before app? I mean, is this the first iteration of it? Was it supposed to be an app from the beginning?
My goodness. I've been working on this for a long time. I've been in this space for a long time. And frankly, it's iterated 1,000 times. But this latest version of the app is the best version by far. Even in the last year, we've had three versions of the app. It's one of those things, you just keep working at it. I say sometimes I'm too dumb to quit, but I just keep working at it and listening. If you listen to parents, they're going to tell you what they want and they're going to tell you how it's helping them. I hit the road literally this year, January and February, before the COVID thing happened. And I was on the road for literally 2 months, just meeting with parents and talking to them. They blew me away because of what they were starting to do with their kids by using the app. It's just like all those conversations like you never could have because you didn't know how to do it or whatever started happening. Little Johnny mowing the lawn, busting it out, earning some money, and then all of a sudden wants to buy fractional shares of stock. Like, what? How does that happen? But it happens because the platform is there and it lets them start talking about this stuff. And then now you've got mom who's dad, they've never bought any stock in their life, buying a fractional share, $25 worth of Disney, and having the conversation. Like, I mean, how amazing is that?
Everybody's learning about money together, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole family's exactly right. Having these conversations we all want to have. I did want to tell you, and part of the reason we wanted to talk to you is I'm into packaging as much as the next guy, and it just looks great. I mean, it is. It's so attractive and it seems so intuitive. But before we get to some of the stories about how people are using it, obviously people can't see it like I can. They can go to busykig.com and they can see there's a finger pointing and showing people like kind of what goes on. It's a really neat site, but walk us through it, Greg. So how do people download it? How do they get the app and how does it work? And then we'll talk about, you know, functionality.
Yeah. So it's easy. You just go to the app store, right? Either Apple or Android, you download the app. The first thing you do is you create your family. And then once you do that, the fun part, you start assigning chores to everybody. It's like, let's get some work done. You know what I mean? Plenty of that going, especially during COVID. We're all stuck in the house together. You know, we're on top of each other. And we got to, you know, give some structure and I think a little bit of a system to the household, because I think that really helps. So you create your family. You give chores to your kids, they do the chores, and then you're going to get a message from us on Thursday that says, tomorrow is Friday, it's payday, and do you want to approve the payday? It's just like a boss would approve payroll. Go through everything, make sure it's right, boom, approve it. Once you do that, we're going to pull the money from your bank account into our system, and then we're going to do the magic. We're going to divide up the money into saving, sharing, and spending automatically. And that's the real big deal here, because if you're teaching your kids a balanced approach every single time they earn money, and that's not the American way. It's like, get it, blow it. Like that seems to be kind of the prevailing attitude. But this is totally different than that. It's every time you earn, you're saving a little bit and investing it in some shares of stock and learning about all that stuff. You're sharing with charities that you care about. And then you're putting the rest on plastic and spending it just like the rest of us do. I mean, this is truly, that's exactly what an adult does. So we just made that to where it's a real experience for a kid. This is not a video game. This is not making your avatar look cool. This is the real deal. This is earning money and managing it.
Boy, I've got so many questions. So let's start off with the obvious one. Fee to use it. Is there a fee to use it? And what? Yeah. How much is that?
Okay, so the app is free. The only cost that you have as a member is if you get the debit card for your kid. Okay, and the debit card is $7.99 per kid per year. Pretty straightforward and pretty low cost. And so we did that on purpose. We want any family out there from any socioeconomic background to be able to use this to teach their kids how to be smart with their money. So that's the cost.
And then
pretty easy, right?
Incredibly easy, which is actually exactly what I expected, because the whole thing seems very easy. But we start off then with savings. So they put money in savings. How does that work? Do kids create a saving goal? Do they have a separate savings account? Tell me about that part.
So we wanted to make this very simple and really kind of model reality once again. So if you think about it, like I use that example, you go to work, you earn some money, and then you put some money in a 401k. Okay, what's in a 401k? It's equities, it's stock, it's mutual funds, usually, right? And then there's bonds and stuff, but that's boring. So we made that to where they can go in and literally browse by brand different companies, different stocks that they can now go in and buy fractional shares of. And it's really important that you do it by brand, I feel, because, like, I'll give you a good example. Nobody knows, I mean, very few kids, if you were to say, hey, you know, Sally, you know what, who Berkshire Hathaway is? They're going to be like, what? Nobody knows what Berkshire Hathaway is. But if you say, hey, Sally, do you know Dairy Queen? They're like, oh, yeah, I love Dairy Queen. I mean, who doesn't like Dairy Queen, right? So you do that by brand, and then you get them involved with something they like and they think is cool. Like, if your kid's way into Teslas, I mean, great. You know, I've got a kid who has Disney stock. I've got another boy who's got Ford because he likes trucks. Who cares? It's the fact that they start investing in something they like and they think is cool, and then they pay attention to it more. And then even more so if they have used their own money to buy it. Oh, yeah, they're going to pay attention, because if it's what I call OPM, other people's money, who cares? I mean, you know, it's OPM. But if it's your own money and you bought it, boy, you're on it. So that's the save area.
OG and I were talking about this yesterday in a whole different area with estate planning, just that whether your parents worked for it hard or some relative passes away and you get this inheritance, so many people just, it's found money. And even though they worked for it hard, you see so many kids just blow it, right? They just blow through mom and dad's money that they worked forever on. But man, if they earn it themselves, you're right. Much, much more likely to
pay
attention.
Different ball game, right? I feel like the worst thing you could do is your kid comes and says, hey, mom, hey, dad, can I have $20 to go to the movies? And you're like, oh, yeah. You pull it out and you give it to them. And I'm thinking, oh, don't do that. Because if you do that, then they're going to blow your money when you die and it goes to them. Right.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about
the seeds really early.
I'm thinking about the kid at the movie theater with these 21s and taking his hand and just going boom, 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 you know, and just
I'll take popcorn. I'll take candy bar.
Oh, wait, I got $3 of mom's money left. What can I buy? Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Soda time.
Not a good steward of the money. The second piece, charities they like. That's really interesting. Tell me about giving.
Okay. So I think philanthropy is an important part of life, just in general, period. So we've partnered with a bunch of charities that we like that do good things. Some are big and some are small, but we've partnered with them to where we can simply, you know, get people, kids to donate to them. And I think it's really important as well as, you know, maybe this kid's got an aunt who's had a bout with cancer and that's kind of their thing. And they want to make a donation to that because they realize it and they understand it because they've been impacted by it. Literally, I just talked to a family the other day who his best friend has some disabilities and some autism stuff. And that's what that kid wanted to donate to. Like, that's awesome. I don't particularly care what kind of works for the family. It's just the fact that every time that kid's earning money, now he's saving a little bit, now he's sharing a little bit, and then he's going to spend a little bit, right? It's that balanced approach. Once again, if you can nail the balanced approach thing, you're going to make some big headway with that kid.
What happens? Do parents and kids set the percentages of each of these together?
Okay, so we try to do all the heavy lifting for everybody, right? Yeah. So we have actually given an allocation based on the kid's age. So if a parent wants to adjust it, they totally can. You know, if they're, you know, a stinker and they say, we don't want to share, you could change it, I guess. But we give that automatically. So when they come through the door, we're going to say, hey,
nice.
50% goes to saving, 10% goes to share, and 40% goes to spend. Boom, boom, boom. Well, and they can just slide it if they want to change it.
Yeah. And you've seen the studies, opt out versus opt in. Always works out better, right? Just
make it simple.
Yes.
And we do the same thing when it comes to the chores too, right? We've had millions of chores done in our system. So we kind of like know the going rate, right? And so we pitch that to the parent. And say, you know, wash the car $10. And now if you're a cheapskate like me, you're going to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, I'm going to change it. And you can just tap it and change it. It's just that easy. But you might as well have a starting point, right?
You do recommend some numbers for each of the chores in there.
Yeah.
That's absolutely really cool. Yeah.
I mean, why rack your brain when you think, okay, that's good. Yeah. Or I just need to adjust it a little bit.
Yeah.
Same thing, right?
Really press the easy button, Greg.
We're trying. And, you know, the thing about it is some of those chores that are, you know, given a certain dollar amount, you know, parents balk at, like me, like a cheapskate, right? Oh, what? I wouldn't pay them that much to do that. And then they drop them down to, you know, a quarter. And then all of a sudden the kid doesn't want to do it. Right. So it's a double-edged sword. And I think it's really important if you're trying, and I know there's this whole school of thought, like, I'm not paying my kid to do anything. He lives in my house and I feed him and whatever. I get that whole argument. I truly do. But if the kid can't get a real job, how is he going to get any money to start managing to do anything with? So you might as well do it.
No, I had people that know my story, Greg, know that I had great parents, except when it came to financial stuff, they were the parents that always left the room or had me leave the room whenever they talked about money. And I went to college. Yeah. I knew nothing about money, got a credit card right away, totally ruined my credit, completely destroyed everything, and then had to learn about it from the ground up. So my feeling is just like yours. Trust your kid and have the guts to parent them when they're younger about good and bad decisions around money. And then when they get bigger amounts of money, they won't blow it like I did.
It's totally right.
Yeah. First time I was making decisions was when I had, some big dollars at stake.
Right. And I think more and more parents, and this is, I think, what the platform lends to as well, is the fact that you get to be a little bit more transparent because the kids are a little bit more inquisitive. Like all of a sudden, when they get the connection between working and money and how those two things kind of work together, they're going to start asking you, like, wait, you say you have to pay insurance on the car every month? Like, what is that? Yeah. And what does that cost? And then all of a sudden you drop, a big number on them and they're like, what? Or if you live in Arizona like I do and the AC is on 24/7 because it's burning hot and it's $700 a month to cool your house, they're like, you're blowing their mind, but they're inquisitive about it. And you can be more transparent because, like, we're all in this together.
Yeah. They get the connection of you being at work and what that really means and how it,
No wonder it works so much. Oh. So we got a $700 AC bill.
That's right. Cause you left the door open, right?
Yeah, exactly. Close that door.
Right. Two more quick questions. Cause I'm running over, but number one is, if people don't have the debit card, how do they get the money out?
So they can do a cash out, right? And they can literally tap the button and send the money back to the parent, and then they can give them the cash.
Okay.
Now, fundamentally, I think, we're kind of becoming more and more of a cashless society. So I don't know how effective that is, but it's definitely something that people do.
Well, it's a reality that teaching them, I think, about the card, whether we like the card or not.
That's right.
I'm with you. From my standpoint, I think, I've been saying this Jack Welch phrase a lot lately, and it's maybe because of the whole COVID thing, facing reality the way it is, not the way that you wish it were. Right.
Yeah. And that's exactly right.
Yeah. So teach them early that plastic is their cash, which brings up the last question. How do you guys make money then? Yeah. If there's no subscription fee, I'm sure the card costs you guys some money to get. So you got to pass that on to people. How does Greg make any money?
No, that's it. That's the card revenue is our major revenue driver. And the bottom line is we need to grow the business and sell a lot of cards to make the money. So that's what we're doing. I mean, last month we had 47,000 people sign up. Wow. So there's a lot of people, they're all stuck in their house because of COVID.
But those houses,
lifeline, please help.
I was going to say, Greg, those houses are spotless now.
I know, right?
The kids have cleaned everything.
I have to admit to you, and I know we need to go, but right when COVID hit, I thought, oh gosh, what are we going to do? We got to amp up the chores even more. I had the boys paint the entire outside of the house. And I was quality control, but they did it all. It took them like a week. I mean, hey, they're not doing anything else. You might as well have them do that.
That's
right.
Great. It's great for them. Great for you. Yeah. Greg,
they
thanks.
Got a tan. They thought it was cool.
All right. How great is that? Bonus. You didn't charge them extra for the tan. The site is Busy Kid. You can find the Busy Kid app in the App Store or Google Play, right?
That's it.
Awesome.
You got it.
Thanks for hanging out, talking Busy Kid with us, Greg. I appreciate it.
Love it. Thanks so much for your time and appreciate it.
Hey, trivia fans, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and staring at this old photo of the Wright brothers all those years ago on today's date, it's got me thinking. OG's been flying for an awfully long time now, at least months, and do you know how many times he's invited the person who makes this podcast really fly up for a ride? Would you believe a grand total of zilch, nada, nothing, never? I know what you're thinking. That's a crime, Doug! Yeah, to which I'd reply, yes it is, person I made up for this discussion. The furthest I've flown was that time I fell out of a tree in Joe's mom's backyard, and I'm hoping I'm better at it now than I was that day. Fairly certain this time I wouldn't be as nervous. But did you hear about that French guy a few weeks ago accidentally ejected himself when he was reluctantly taken up in a French fighter jet? Actually, wait, shouldn't that be called a French surrender jet? Nice job, sound guy. Regardless, how about this question? How many beats per minute was the French guy's heart beating when he got into the jet? I'll be back with your, twisty loop-de-loop of an answer faster than OG can get the flaps up, if you know what I mean.
For those of you that don't know this story, this was a 68-year-old gentleman whose friends gave him, as a gift, they gave him a ride in a French fighter jet. So they pooled their money together and they purchased this gift. And he was too embarrassed to tell them that even though he really liked planes, he was very nervous about flying and did not want to go. So he didn't tell anybody. He gets in the plane. They attach a heart monitor to him, which is how we know how many beats per minute his heart was beating at. And the second that the plane took off and fighter jets take off fairly fast, he reached up for something to hold on to and accidentally grabbed the eject button and pulled on the eject and his seat ejected right out of the plane. Goodness. He ended up being okay because it had a parachute and he was fine. The bigger miracle, they actually said, was that without the lid on the cockpit
canopy
Thank you, Mr. Pilot. The pilot was still able to lay in the plane. So, everybody,
could you imagine like, okay, here we go. And up we go. Like what the,
like what happened? Like what happened to Bill? So if you get some time, everybody go look up that story, 'cause it's pretty interesting. So the question is, how many beats per minute was his heart beating as that, as he got into the plane? We will answer it this way. This is part of a year-long competition we're having between Len, Paula, and OG. And L, you are playing on behalf of Paula. And I hate I hate to tell you this. That means you get to come way from behind because the score, Paula has 4. OG has 6. And Len has been on a tear lately. He is pulling ahead to 8. So
no pressure.
So, well, there's definitely enough. I mean, Paula's not doing that great. So it doesn't, you can't do worse. So L, it's on you. Would you like to guess first, in the middle, or last?
I'm going to go last.
All right.
I'm going to go last. I want to see who I'm up against.
All right. Makes sense to me. OG, would you like to go in the middle or first?
Middle today.
All right. Len, that means you've got the floor, my friend. How many beats per minute was his heart beating when he got in that plane?
All right. So he's nervous already. He's nervous. He was probably nervous going to the airport since he was afraid of planes. So let's see. Normal heart rate is what? 60? Is that right? 72, something like that?
Ish.
98.6, somewhere in there.
Hot 96.6.
Wait, 72, that's the par at my golf course now.
Do you think these guys are going to help you?
I think you're a little high. I think the number's closer to like 11.
Yeah. Okay, that's Felipe. Almost
a corpse there. Oh my goodness. But you don't want to be like Andy. I heard him a few weeks ago be a little too high with that Ford Mustang.
Oh yeah, Andy Hill with the Ford Mustang. Holy cow.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. You know what? I'm just going to say 2.5 times 60. Assuming 60s. Is that right? Oh, what the hell? That's 120, 160, 120, 150 beats per minute.
150 beats per minute. OG?
Len has not exercised in 20 years, apparently. I feel like that number is way off. I hope it is. So here's how I was thinking about it. You know, the heart rate monitors and all that stuff would tell you that if you're working out really hard, it's your high, you know, max heart rate is going to be 220 minus your age. So if your age is...
So mine's 90?
Sure. And you said this dude is 70, right?
68 years old, yes.
So roughly 70. So 220, 70 from 220 is 150. That's, so that would be your answer in terms of like max cardio heart rate, but this dude is catapulting off a runway at about 160 miles an hour.
I want to be clear yet. This is when he's getting into the jet. This is when he gets into the jet.
Into the jet. Oh, I thought like at canopy pole.
I'd love to have that number, but this is when he's getting into the jet.
Oh, it would be great to know, like, as he was ejecting,
right?
What was like, just
I believe I don't have the number here with me, but I think it was about 680.
That sounds about right.
Okay, then Len, I retract everything I was thinking about you and also said about you. Okay. Because I think you may be a smidge closer. So,
but just a smidge.
Yeah. Shnikes. He wasn't running a marathon. He wasn't straight up in a sprint, and that would be like basically 100. So I actually think the number's going to be a little bit lower if this was prior to catapulting into the sky on a rocket. So I'm going to say 146.
Extremely lower.
142. I'm going to change my number. 142. Okay.
142. All right.
I'm just going to take his homework and tweak that. No.
Yeah.
Is it who's closest but doesn't go over?
It is no longer without going over. Yeah, we're not doing the Price is Right thing anymore.
Because I was going to go $1. I mean, that's always the answer.
Sure.
Well, you can do the analog. You just do one under OG.
Or you do one over.
No, you didn't want to do that.
Whichever.
Let's see. So I'm guessing they're excited. He's about to go on the plane. I think your cardio hits around, I think 120. They say you're actually like burning fat and getting active. So I'm going to say 125.
125. All right. We'd love to tell you the answer, but you know what? We're going to make you wait. So we will be right back.
During this time of need and suffering, if you aren't a first responder, you're holed up at home, and maybe your life feels a little empty. Well, here in Joe's mom's basement, we've been working to fill that void. You know what you need? More political ads.
Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, international celebrity and host of the wildly popular Stacking Benjamins podcast. And I'm here to tell you that while these other candidates are busy with trifling matters of national importance, I'm here on the scene doing what good politicians do. Politicianing. I've come up with a 47-point plan on what I'll do when elected, and today I'm happy our team is going to share it with you. Announcer guy?
First, with an overwhelming groundswell of support, neighbor Doug, on day one of his administration, would immediately nationalize video conferencing software, Zoom.
Hey, I like capitalism as much as the next guy, but we need a reliable platform to watch cat videos and share Tiger King memes. That's why I think the government should take full control of this company, making sure that we all have equal opportunity to gossip about the neighbors and that one relative none of us like while we're stuck inside, you know.
Second, neighbor Doug believes in safety.
I don't know about you, but all this indoor activity has me jittery. That's why I'd immediately use my executive powers to open all Dairy Queens so that we can get that awesome blizzard with the chocolate ice cream and Butterfinger pieces to all of our doors. It's an emergency.
And finally, well, not actually finally, because he's got 47 points here, but...
Hey, just read him, announcer boy.
Okay, let's go with this one. When elected, Doug will focus on things that matter.
That's why I propose to have all sunny days, no more coronavirus, and peace between people. Yeah, except the jerks. Oh, and the bozos. Nobody likes the bozos and the losers. I mean, we need more winners, am I right?
So vote Doug 2020, because he's not crooked.
And L, you are clearly the lowest one at 125, but you've got a smile on your face. You like that?
I do. I'm sorry. I'm just going on my bargain instinct. It's the personal finance writer in me. I'm going to go for the lowest number.
I bet I could get a lower heart rate than that. Yes. OG 142.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought we were going with the prior to rocket up the butt into the atmosphere.
That's incredibly descriptive there. Len, 150. 150.
I'm feeling good. I think my streak is going to continue today.
Well, we will see. All right, Doug, what's our answer?
Hey, Stackers, it's your aviation pal, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And I can't believe that French guy ejected himself. What a coward. When OG takes me up, I'm going to demand, that's right, demand that we do no fewer than 10 backflips and barrel rolls and Immelman moves because I'm the original daredevil. That's right. I think it's time that, just like the Wright brothers, I too conquer the air. Today is the day that Doug takes to the sky. And now that that's decided, let's go to today's trivia. The question was, how many beats per minute was the French guy's heart beating when he got into the plane? Well, the 64-year-old was so nervous before his flight, his heart was already beating an astonishing top end of 142 beats per minute, even before takeoff. Talk about your heart thumper. All right, I need to go get psyched up for my flight with OG.
He nailed it.
That's too scary.
Just exactly right. How often does that happen? I think, Len, you've done that twice, haven't you?
Last week, right on the number.
I've done it twice.
That's crazy.
142. That's... So that means he must have been up around 165, 170 when he pulled that ripcord.
I don't think it's possible. I mean, I think maybe it's possible, but, you know, your max heart rate goes down quite a bit as you get older.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yes, he was already topping out.
And he was basically tapping out, yeah.
When he got in the plate.
I wouldn't have done it. If I was that nervous, I wouldn't even have done it. I just said, hey, guys, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Thank you, but somebody else go for me.
And then you live the next 36 years of your life going, buck, 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 buck.
And now every time he gets up from a gathering, now he's like, I'm pulling the ripcord on this event. Every time. Hey guys, let's take out the magnifying glass and help somebody do better with their money. Today's hotline call comes to us courtesy of magnifymoney.com. L, you know what happens when you go to stackybenjamins.com/magnifymoney?
You get answers.
Incredible answers. And the specific answer is that those financial products you use every day that you bought at your brick and mortar bank, nowhere near the best in class. Over 92% of the savings accounts, checking accounts, credit cards, consolidation loans, all the financial stuff you use, it's all available online and all ranked at Magnify Money. Head to stackybenjamins.com/magnifymoney for more. Today, we're actually going to go to a question I asked on Twitter that a lot of people answered. And I wanted to get your take on this and maybe find out what some of our listeners are thinking. Email me about this one. What's your best example? Your best example of just because you can doesn't mean you should when it comes to your money.
Oh, house for sure.
A house.
I feel like that is one of those milestones people think they have to hit in their life, whether or not they want to, and whether or not their lifestyle that they want to pursue is aligned with it.
And what's funny, Al, is I feel like the bank usually kind of talks you into it. I mean, the lender, because they're like, well, guess what? According to this calculation, you can afford to buy about double the house. You probably should.
I will tell you a story about that with our first house, because that's exactly what happened. We went to the bank and we already kind of ran our numbers and we came up with the number we were very comfortable with. We thought we can nail this and still have room for vacations, you know, something called a life. Saving if something goes wrong. And the bank gave us the most ridiculous number. I remember talking with a friend and they were like, oh my goodness, they must think you're so financially responsible. And I'm like, they must think we're suckers. The number that they came back was just ridiculous. If we gave up everything, sure, we could afford the house, but it would leave no room for fun. And I think that was an immediate wake-up call for us.
But you've told a story before, Len, I think, where when you bought a house, maybe the house you're in now, like you did that. You took as much as you could possibly get.
I did, but it turned out it worked out for the best because when I qualified, the honeybee, we had her quit her job before we went and looked for a loan, which just halved our income. I could have got, you know, we could have had more income. We could have had an even bigger house. So it actually worked out to the fact that, yes, we barely qualified for the house we needed. And since then, over time, you know, we could have bought, moved up and bought a much bigger house, but we never did. And I'd say as a corollary to that is, you know, don't move up to a bigger house just because you can. If the house you have is good enough, stick with the lower payments in the house you have and the lower maintenance costs and lower utility costs. You know, it makes a lot of sense to have a lot of room for spending extra money on other things.
Oh, gee, what's the first thing you thought of? Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
I have such little self-restraint.
he's done it all.
that there's pretty much like I can't. I mean, this sounds really stupid, but I'll try anything. I bought an apartment building just because I could, and it turned out okay so far. We'll see if everybody pays their rent next month, but yeah, so we'll see how that turns out. Most things that you spend money on are stuff you don't need to. I mean, it just really is. Every single solitary thing, other than like food and even a lot of food, frankly, but shelter, electricity, you know, all that sort of stuff. Okay, fine. You got to do that. But almost everything else is negotiable. And you're trading away something in the future for something today. And the important piece when it comes to this stuff is not just looking at it from the perspective of like, well, this is what I want to do. It's really being honest with yourself about what the change looks like down the line. You get a new car, for example. Yeah, okay, fine. It's $500 a month or $800 a month or $1,000 a month. So be it. Maybe that fits in your budget. Maybe you're, you know, people focus so much energy and effort on like the optimization thing and well, you're not supposed to dot, 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 dot. It's like, but if all my goals are on track, what does it matter to you if I go on vacation and spend money? You know, that's what the thing is about. I think if you're ahead of the curve, if you're ahead of the game, try to make your goals more challenging. Say, hey, if you're on track for retirement at 60, try to be on track for retirement at 58. What do you have to do extra? What do you got to bring to the table a little bit more to work on? But man, I think, you know, this particular question, I remember you asking me on a Twitter and I remember thinking to myself, like, dude, I do everything I want to do. Like I live a charmed life. I mean, I can't do everything, but I do everything I want. You know,
we did get some great answers from our friends on Twitter. Dana says, I like to say just because you can buy an exchange traded fund for a Chilean cell phone companies doesn't mean that you should. Niche investing. By the way, I have no idea if such an ETF exists. I just know most investors don't need to be that granular.
I got a whole bunch of naked call options on those companies. It's
on those, amazing. On those Chilean cell phone companies?
Chilean cell phones.
That's right.
It's the future.
Len, I thought you'd appreciate...
They're denominated in the Brazilian currency, which I'm really bullish on.
We still don't know how much money a Brazilian is, though.
We don't.
I know a billion and a trillion, but not a Brazilian. I'm not there. Our friend at Free to Pursue, Helene, says overpurchasing perishable items. I feel like Len, that's like in your wheelhouse, talking about trips to the grocery store and over.
You should see my bunker. You should see my bunker. It's loaded with, well, perishable. It's loaded with non-perishable
items. Yeah, but those perishables, we've done that before where we failed to meal plan, right? We don't meal plan. So we just go and we're like, oh, that looks, oh, apples. I probably need. And then, you know, then you look at them and they're all gummy because you didn't eat them in the first 5 days.
I had all this salad down here.
Yes.
We just threw away four nice tomatoes because we, you know, we do meal plan every 2 weeks. We make meal for 2 weeks, but the meal with the tomatoes, the fresh tomatoes, we didn't eat till the end of the 2 weeks. Yeah. So by then the tomatoes were, you know, so you, it's not just meal plan. You got a meal plan to the perishables as well.
Who got fired for that decision, Len? Which one of your family members got voted off the island?
Yeah, right.
That's a lot of waste, though. You're talking about like fresh food and stuff like that. There's a ton of waste in that. Take bananas, for example. Bananas are good for about 3.5 minutes after you bring them home from the store.
Yeah.
And then they're become banana bread quality, and then they become trash. Like, and it happens in the span of like 6 hours. You can take bananas apart at the store. Like, they come, you get that big bunch of bananas, and there's like seven of them on there. Just take off three, you know, or the ones that you want. You don't have to have again
about splitting the banana. I think
not a literal one banana. You can't come up to the counter with a half a banana. I think
you take the tag off your mattresses too.
Because you're separating mama banana from her kid bananas.
Exactly.
Is that what you're talking about? Yeah.
But if you're being intentional about it, it's like if you're buying tomatoes, like you said, you go, well, let's just, I don't know, get four of them. But if you knew that you only needed two, you wouldn't feel as bad, you know, if you had to chuck two of them. I don't know.
My father-in-law used to avoid all this discussion because he would just eat all the vegetables and fruit right at the store.
Yeah. Well, there's a handful you can get.
No waste.
It's in handfuls. As long as you have less than one handful of fresh green beans or cherries, you're also allowed to eat cherries from the store.
I couldn't stand by him because he would stand over the seedless grapes and it was like Papa Dave buffet.
Really frown on you, like cutting open an avocado and making guacamole right in the produce section of Kroger.
That's what he got kicked out. Was right. No.
Like, sir, can I help you? Or like, yeah. Do you guys got any sea salt? Right.
Could you bring over some
cilantro?
I need some tortilla chips. Bring the tortilla chips over here. Right. This is a great place. I love this. I never get charged. Yeah. Fire on the Plains blogger says day trading, just because you have the funds and cushion to do it doesn't mean you should. How about this one? Clarky wrote this one. This is a little close to home. I was reading about this in one of the major publications lately. Becoming an Airbnb superhost with 50 debt levered properties. Hashtag oops. Yeah.
Yep.
Might be an over your head. And our friend Annie said a collection of store offered credit cards. There's another one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Thanks to everybody for playing that game with us. All right. That's going to do it for today, guys. Man, that was fun. Let's let our guest of honor go last. So we'll start with OG. What do you got going on? We got you out of here in just over an hour.
Big weekend planned, actually. Unofficial kickoff to summer across these United States, which is fantastic. Right. Kids have been out of school for a week. Usually they get out of school this week, but with the distance learning, they've been out a week already. The in-laws are in town. My daughter turns four, so we've got a four-year-old birthday party. I don't know what that means, if we're going to have people over or not yet. That's kind of a game day decision. It kind of depends on the rules, however they change them to by the time we get to the party.
Put everybody on the other side of your lawn.
We have a fence, so we were thinking we'll have everybody collect themselves on the public side of the fence, and then they can throw their presents over the fence to my daughter.
Which, and, by the way, has we'll nothing.
Throw hot dogs and hamburgers over to them.
Oh, I was going to say, throwing the presents over the fence is what you did even before the pandemic. That has nothing to do with the pandemic.
You're welcome to come by and drop a present off. You can leave it over the side of the left gate. Could we come in and go to the pool party? No, that's really not a thing that we're offering this year, but you can leave all of your gifts on the porch.
That would be great. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah.
Mr. Penzo, what's going on at lenpenzo.com?
Hey, I've got a classic I'm rerunning this week, just in time for the holiday. 21 reasons, and I'm speaking from experience here, why corner lots are for suckers. So, and this is coming from somebody who had a corner lot for 10 years. And I've learned, I'm trying to tell you, please, folks, don't buy a house with a corner lot.
Were you on a corner lot and next to the railroad track?
Yes. A corner lot, yes, and 50 yards from the railroad tracks.
You got just completely hosed on that house.
That was the most stupidest buy of my entire life.
I have a funny story about that I'd like to share a little later. Maybe. If we get a chance.
Maybe some other time. Al, thanks for hanging out with us.
It's been a blast.
It's crazy. For people that will open up behind the scenes for a minute, because of my Arizona move, Al has gotten the date of this like four different times. We're recording this on this date. Nope, this date. Nope. And then today at like 4 o'clock, I'm like, no, we're going right now. So thanks for being flexible.
Oh, it's always fun. Don't worry about that. It gives me an excuse to hide from the kids. I mean, give myself some quality time.
That's right. With us. Quality time with us. We know. Yeah. So what's happening in a couple money podcast?
Sure. Well, this month we're doing a reader mailbag all month long, answering people's questions about how to handle their finances right now. And we got some great stories. We have Jeff, who's paid off $350,000 of debt. And we also have Annie, who has been laid off as soon as the announcement was made about the stay-at-home order, but now has turned it around with an Etsy store that is booming in business.
Wow.
And we're just answering people's questions about what to do next.
Oh, that is really cool. Well, it's always fun. And it's, you do such a great job of producing that show. And it's such a thoughtful, it's like an NPR style show. It is just very, very well put together. It is, it's awesome work.
Oh, yep. Thank you. It's a labor of love. And I love the community and want to help out. Marriage and money is a fun topic, but let's be honest, sometimes it's a little bit stressful.
So. Slightly.
Gotcha, fun.
I bet there's a little more stress the last couple months as people are finally figuring out what it's like to be with your spouse 24/7.
Yeah. I like to think of it as a constant money date or just going on a date with your friend.
A date that might have gone too long, but yes, but a yes. Date. Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for today. Doug, you got it from here, my friend. What should we have learned today?
So, what should we have learned today? Take a lesson from our special guest, Greg Merced. Giving your kids tasks and task lists may be a great way to help them mature and grow. But the big takeaway? When I asked OG if he had one of the seat ejector thingamajigs on his plane, just in case, he said, no. So completely unrelated, I just realized I have to study for a blood test on the day we're going to fly. Oh, no. Oh, you got to be. I was so looking forward to that. Oh, man, that was going to be fun. Oh, man. Maybe we'll have to reschedule that, you know, like on a day. If only I could find a day that didn't end in Y. Well, you know, or, you know, if he had a plane that had a parachute like in the tail so that if it were going to crash, you could just pull a lever and a parachute would pop out. But I mean, they don't even make planes that do that. So that just stinks. But, you know, we'll figure it out. I'll get up there with him sooner or later. Special thanks to El Martinez for hanging out with us today. You'll find Elle's show, Couple Money, at couplemoney.com or wherever finer podcasts are distributed. Also, special thanks to Greg Merced from BusyKid.com. We'll also have a link to BusyKid if you want to check it out at our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. Len Penzo appears courtesy of LenPenzo.com and ThePersistentItch.com. This show is created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Karen Rapine, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I swear the worst part about coming over to Joe's mom's house is having to put on pants. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remunerations. That's a big word. There's no way you take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial decisions, consult with a real financial advisor.
Welcome to the after show. This is the part of the show that doesn't exist. If you're new here, here are the rules. We don't talk about the after show. What happens here stays here. And yeah, we have some people every once in a while that just can't help themselves and they talk about it. So we did make a cheater rule a couple of years ago where you can talk about dessert if you want. If you really have to call it dessert. If you have
to bring something up, you can call it dessert.
Yes, talk about dessert. But anyway, OG, you were saying earlier.
We bought our first home prior to the housing crash in 2007, 2008. A young married couple. We'd been married 5 years together, 10 at that point. And it was a new build. And I was really excited because, you know, God's not making any more land. So you better get in, better buy a 4-bedroom colonial in a neighborhood you've never seen because you never know. They're not going to make any more houses ever. So we picked out, my wife actually picked out the lot and it was fine. It wasn't a corner lot, which is nice.
He wouldn't make that kind of mistake, Len.
I would never make that mistake. Although yeah, we did try to get the corner lot because that was, that's the good one. So my, so I've been told. So my friend's in town, one of my really good friends, and I'm really proud of the fact that we own this piece of property and they're going to start building at it as soon as the frost clears in a few months. And they got the signs in the yard, you know, lot number, you know, and they got our name on there. And so I drive up to this place with my friend. We get out and I'm kind of mapping it out for him. It's kind of snow covered. So I'm like, okay, here's the one corner. Here's the other corner. You know, this is where the driveway's going to be. And so I'm kind of all excited talking about it. And just as I'm standing there, you just hear, and I just stand there and freeze. And my buddy looks at me, he goes, didn't know the railroad tracks were around the, over the wood line, did you? And I went, no, we never went that way. Because when we bought the house, we like literally drove down the road and then turned into the subdivision. And the railroad tracks were down a hill, but like a quarter mile. Like you couldn't, you know, you couldn't see that there were railroad tracks. And our house wasn't exactly behind the railroad tracks. There was like another layer of homes and then a little bit of a wooded lot and then railroad tracks. I don't know what you thought about this, Len, but after a really short period of time, it was pretty unnoticeable.
No, that's not at all in my case. Look, no. I was, my house was 50 yards from the road. And this is so stupid when I bought my stupid house. I was 26. I bought it at the top of the market back in 1990 in Southern California. And 3 months, I couldn't have timed the top any better. 3 months before the top.
Exactly what we did in Michigan.
Did you? The real estate agent took me on a Saturday. See, oh, and you got to get the house, you know, it's going to, you know, the price is only going to go up higher. You know, you better get it now. It's like, yeah, and I'm 26 years old going, yeah, I guess I better. Yeah. Okay. So of course he did it on a Saturday because the train traffic, there's no train traffic at all. I saw the stupid train tracks, but I just couldn't imagine how loud a freight train is going down those tracks. Well, it turns out when I moved in that Monday, the first train came and it shook the walls. It turns out that this was on a major line going into Los Angeles. Okay. So the train was passing 10 times a day, Monday through Friday on that line. And it just, like I said, it shook the house every single time. When I watched TV, you had to put pause on the TV. You just had to, you know, you'd miss it because of the stupid horn blaring. And I was stuck in that house for 10 years because I was upside down. Oh my God, what a nightmare.
When we bought our house in Texas, we are right on the railroad tracks again.
You have a thing for trains.
I guess so. although this time we did a whole bunch of research. We sat out here for like hours waiting for the train to come by just to like, you know, just parked out in the street and waited for it to come by. It comes by twice a day. It's in the morning and the evening. It's not particularly loud.
Probably a short little train.
It's a Kansas City Railroad, whatever Kansas is the name City of it. Southern, yeah. We had one issue where the train track got washed out a little bit. We had a ton of rain and they decided to repair it, you know, because it makes the most sense to work on repairing a train between the hours of 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. That's when you should fix a railroad track. That was the period of time that we've ever had here because it was like, it was like rocks grating against the, you know, for like 8 hours at night. It was unbearable. But otherwise, it's fine. The Saturday early morning guy, the 4 a.m. dude, he's got a thing for the horn. He is just mad as hell that he has to be up at 4 in the morning. And his thing is, I'm going to make sure that every other SOB up and down this 70 miles I got to travel is also awake. And there's big signs on the thing. It says, you know, no train horn, neighborhood, whatever. And this dude's like, yeah, sure, come get me. You know, just.
Yeah, you can tell the engineers by how they blow the horns. Like, they have different, you know, you'll hear. Some guys will just lay it on. You know. But
that's the guy. That's the 4 a.m. guy. You know, he does the like.
Yeah, the nice guy.
Oh man, I feel ill-equipped. I don't have a train story, but we did live by Oceana Air Base, and it was, I don't know if they timed it on purpose, but during prime time hours, whenever it was like CSI and the murderer is what just happened? Yeah, I felt bad for my mom. It was the worst because when the planes didn't fly, then of course, and the murderer is, hey, mom, can I have a cookie? Mom, three kids just interrupting. So that was rough for her. Got closed captioning.
Well, this show's over, Stackers, but you know what? It's Military Appreciation Month, and that means that we've got time still for a shout out to members of our community, members of our family who have served our country. And you know what? Today, I want to give a shout out to two of my uncles, my Uncle Henry, who is in the Army. Let's do three. My Uncle Eddie, who is in the Army, and my Uncle Bill, also in the Army. And two of them served in Vietnam. One served in Korea. And a big thanks to all three of my uncles, my dad's brothers who served like he did in the military. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just my uncles, but they want to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Of course, you may be eligible for Navy Federal membership and you don't even know it because it's open to all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families. They're all eligible, and I want to reiterate, and their families. If you have family, like I do, who served in the military, well, then you're eligible for Navy Federal membership. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve, and many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. Here during Military Appreciation Month, Stackers, go visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you're going to see all of Navy Federal's Military Appreciation Month offers so many cool things they're doing for veterans. You'll also see all their other awesome 24/7, 12 months of the year offers. That's NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.